Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on our show with us today a special guest, Mr. Fred Cutting, a retired engineer who lives in Florida, who's been involved with helping to write the new proposed Florida science standards, and who also has expressed some dissenting viewpoints from the proposed science standards in Florida, who's here to give us a report on what has gone on there, and also to tell us his own story about why he feels that the proposed science standards in Florida are deficient. So, Mr. Cutting, thank you so much for being on our show with us today.
You're welcome.
First, I would like to just ask you a little bit about your own background. What is your background in science and education?
I worked 42 years as an aerospace engineer on everything from Apollo to space station. And the last 10 years, I was an engineering fellow. And part of the responsibility of an engineering fellow is to train incoming engineers to pass the baton, what little bit of wisdom I gleaned in that 40-some years I tried to pass on to younger engineers. And I got a pretty good idea of how they think when they first come out of school and sort of what they're thinking.
So you have had a lot of firsthand experience with what is right about science education in America, as well as what is wrong with science education.
I think as just the general population goes, I'd say that's probably true. I don't have near the knowledge, say, that a college professor would have. But as the end user of the education product, namely the guys with a fresh bachelor's of science degree, gals, the fresh master's of science degree in engineering, yes, I do have a good handle on that.
I think that maybe you have more experience than many college professors because you're the one who, as you said, deals with the end product. You get to see exactly how these students have been trained, whereas, you know, professors, potentially all they have to do is teach lectures and grade papers, but they don't necessarily know the quality of the student that they're producing in many cases. How would you respond to that?
I don't want to step on any professor's toes because I recognize they have very good educations.
Sure.
And they are well-educated people. But yeah, the things that I saw, and it wasn't me, my other senior colleagues, we typically it would take us a couple of years to train out the individualism in the young engineer. He or she would come out of school and they are used to working very little as a team, maybe a team report or something like that, but all tests were individually done and most reading and studying was individually done. So when they come out of school, they tend to want to think on their own individually and to train intellectual teamwork into them to where we can identify a problem and sit and brainstorm it and work together. But in about 2 years, we get that trained out of them.
Sure.
The thing that we never get trained out, and one point I made in the committee we can talk about a little later, is creativity. I have a strong feeling the engineers we got in our company were generally good. I think they were cut above average. But they seem to lack the ability to think creatively. And I would have to say that that's almost something that you get when you grow up because I've never really seen it improve in myself or anybody else that much after we've got our sheepskin in an industry. Some people are creative. Everyone's creative to a greater or lesser extent. But my gut feeling is they could be more creative if they had more mental stimulation in school rather than just going through theories by rote.
I think that very point you just made will come up later in this conversation from what I know that you've said in the past. So, Mr. Cutting, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in the debate over evolution?
Well, I started being an engineer. I work in the innate sciences, and my wife got me a subscription to Scientific American, which I read some of the nuclear power stuff, which part of my background. But I started reading some of the biology and cosmology, and that biology really started to interest me because it was so different. Biology is, my perception is that it's much more complicated than my day-to-day work in using Newtonian physics. So it's been sort of an avocation to study that.
And where do you stand on the issue of evolution?
Evolution is really in two parts, as you well know. Microevolution is the day-to-day evolution, sort of like Newtonian physics. It's what we use every day. Then macroevolution is the evolution of the species. In other words, microevolution is you can breed dogs, or you can breed cattle, you can breed corn, and bring out favorable traits. The macroevolution, of course, is where did the corn, where did the dog, where did the cow come from to begin with? And in the microevolution, I'm a strong evolutionist. I mean, it's obvious. Medicines, antibiotics, the bacteria get resistant, and they change a little bit, and that's microevolution. The macroevolution is where did that first bacteria cell come from? Where did the first dog come from? And I did learn a little bit about the Cambrian explosion in my reading, and that was very fascinating. And even the little bit I've read of Darwin, even Darwin recognized we had this Cambrian explosion problem where all of the animal and plant phyla that we know of evolved in a very short geologic time period, like 560 million years ago. Within 10 million years, everything was up and going.
Sure.
It looks like, to me, microevolution is rock solid, and macroevolution is, well, frankly, what I'm seeing in we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, but what I'm seeing in the rest of the world is it's almost like a religion. I believe people get very upset if you challenge that belief.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I know that the reason we wanted to have you on the show is because you have been on the framing committee for the proposed Florida science standards. Why don't you tell us a little bit of background about how you got on that framing committee and what your experience has been?
I went to a debate at Valencia College, and I was looking for some data on the macroevolution, and I really didn't get any. And as a result of that, I continued to get more interested in the subject. I found out about the state science standards, and I thought that I would like to get involved in that. I'm a new retiree. I just retired 2 years ago, and I had the time to get involved, and I thought I could help. Actually, now that I think about it, the real reason I got involved was I told you the engineers, I thought I could really help to ask the professors and the high school teachers, look, let these kids work together more, because when we get them, they don't want to do intellectual teamwork. I guess the second idea was more generated when I was once on the standards. First meeting we had 4 3-day meetings. The first one, 80% of the meeting was dominated by experts talking to us about what's lacking in American education.
Oh, really?
And I think that's what, yes.
And what did they say?
Well, basically what they said was, we teach science a mile wide and an inch deep. Our students are all walking encyclopedias of fact, and they really don't have a good grounding in the theory. And that resonated with me because that stuck right in my mind. I said, that's why our kids and myself, I'm a product of the Florida public school system right up through the University of Florida, we don't have to think enough. All we got to do is memorize the answer, i.e. memorize the fact, and we don't really have to think about that much about the theory. In my own case, Newtonian physics sort of grew on me over the years as I repeatedly used it in structural analysis on spacecraft, but it really resonated the idea that our kids weren't really learning what's in the theory.
Yeah.
And so I got up the last day, there was a meeting of three of us, and I was a team leader. I got up and said those two things, that we need more intellectual teamwork, and we need more studying of the pros and cons of the theory. So is really, when you study the pros and cons, you start getting ownership. When you just memorize a bunch of facts, it's somebody else's theory. It's not really inbred in you. But once you've defended it and studied it from different points of view, it becomes your own knowledge.
So when you got on this committee, did you feel that they were interested in applying this approach, this philosophy of education that says that we need to teach students to wrestle with the information, to critically analyze data, rather than just sort of engaging in rote memorization? Did you feel that they were applying that kind of an approach to evolution?
Well, let me say, first of all, to almost everything except evolution, they were 100% engaging in that kind of thing. But on the life science committee, they start out their body of knowledge, which is one of the benchmarks, with a statement like, evolution is the fundamental concept underlying all of biology and is supported by multiple forms of scientific evidence. We've already talked about micro and macroevolution, and this, what they're saying here, is exactly true for microevolution, and it is grossly overstated for macroevolution. And the committee refused to put anything in the standards that differentiated or even identified those two aspects of evolution.
And so, in your opinion, did they apply this philosophy of science that allows for, you know, critical thinking and allow students to wrestle with the data? Did they apply that kind of philosophy when they wrote the sections on teaching evolution?
Well, unfortunately, they did not. As a matter of fact, if anything, they really biased the questions they asked. I've already told you about that benchmark from the body of knowledge. There were four standards that the teachers are supposed to teach to that I tried to get all four of them to be a little more open, a little more willing to be considered and evaluated, and rather than just being dogmatic questions, and I feel they're quite dogmatic. For instance, origins of life, and I'm picking two here that are quite simple, that's easy to read. Express scientific explanations of the origins of life on Earth. The way it's stated to me, it's a foregone conclusion that there's good scientific explanations. I asked them to change that to use critical and logical thinking to explain and assess scientific hypothesis for the origin of life on Earth. Explain the solved problems and the unsolved problems in the origin of life research. And that was voted down.
So you're saying that they acted as if there are no unsolved problems in the origin of life, and they did not want to adopt the standard that you proposed that suggested that there were some unsolved problems in the origin of life. And, you know, this reminds me, just a few months ago, a science writer, Greg Easterbrook, wrote in Wired magazine, he wrote the following, quote, "What creates life out of the inanimate compounds that make up living things? No one knows. How were the first organisms assembled? Nature hasn't given us the slightest hint. If anything, the mystery has deepened over time," unquote. It sounds to me like the people who drafted the life science standards in Florida, you know, refused to acknowledge the fact that there are unsolved questions about the origin of life. I mean, is that basically correct? Is that what happened?
No, you are exactly correct on that. I tried to introduce, for instance, the book that came out from the MIT Press in 2003 by Professors Mueller and Newman. Professor Mueller's at University of Vienna. Professor Newman is at the New York Medical College, I believe it is. And they edited a book that has about 20 different authors to it. They titled the book Origination of Organismal Forms, that basically said from a 1999 conference they had near Vienna, they had no idea how the various, they don't believe we have any idea how the various phyla came into being. And furthermore, they totally dismissed chemical evolution as being so improbable as to not to exist. And yeah, I tried to get these guys on the committee to look at some of that kind of stuff, and they would hear nothing of it. So I was told, and I don't doubt it, that this committee selected what standards they were going to use after our first day.
Wow. Okay, so they did not want to budge from groups that were already treating this issue in a dogmatic fashion. Were there any other standards that concerned you in the proposed science standards?
As I said, there were four, but I'll just cite one more example because it's very short and probably of interest to your audience, and that is human evolution. On human evolution, they said, identify basic trends in hominid evolution from early ancestors 6 million years ago to modern humans. I borrowed this sentence from somebody who had sent in something on the email, and they said, identify the types of fossil hominoid species and use critical and logical thinking to explain aspects of human origins that are documented and those that are not documented by the fossil record. I mean, I got pounced on this one, and they would not budge. None of these four did they change one dot or one tittle. My efforts on getting some what I would call more scientific approach, more of a buying into the theory, met with zero success. This is the way it's going to be, and there's going to be no questions about it.
Okay, well, so Mr. Cutting, I understand that it must have been very frustrating to feel like, you know, they're willing to apply an open philosophy of science education, you know, teaching education, not indoctrination, to so many aspects of the science standards. And then when it comes to evolution, they're taking these dogmatic statements that don't allow for any scientific questioning of Darwinian evolution. What did you do in response? What was your way of responding to the fact that they refused to allow for any scientific questions about evolution?
Yes. Well, you know, even in the life sciences, their standards are very good, except in that evolution area. I want to say that before I answer. But what I did was, because of these points, and they're all of the points within the evolution, directly identified evolution section, I wrote a minority report, and I have sent it to the state board at the Department of Education, the Florida Department of Education in Tallahassee, in which I basically gave the leaders of the Florida Department of Education what I was trying to put in, and frankly, in hopes that I really feel that this is a better scientific approach. I really feel that maybe these people who were so dogmatic and put in these statements so dogmatically are fighting some imagined enemy, some, you know, right-wing creationist or somebody. I don't know who they're trying to fight, but every place else, they're very scientific, but here they aren't. And so I sent in this minority report. Hopefully, the leaders of our Florida Department of Education will recognize that this is a more scientific approach, this is a better way to teach, and will incorporate at least part of what I've suggested here.
Okay, well, that's great news. So there is a minority report that you've produced that will hopefully resolve some of the problems in the evolution standards and Florida's proposed standards. And from what I've heard, this will come to a vote by the State Board of Education on February 19th. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I might say I've talked like the Lone Ranger here, and I pretty much was on that committee. But there is a lot of reaction, and a whole school boards in the state of Florida, at least a dozen of them, I've been told, have passed resolutions against this portion of the standards. Again, the standards in general are good, but this portion, you know, if people just don't like, even laymen just don't like it being that dogmatic, I don't think.
Sure. Well, I think and that's encouraging to hear that the school boards are actually stepping up and taking a stand here against poor life science standards. I think it's great to hear that the school districts in Florida care about, you know, the teaching of evolution enough to actually pass their own resolutions saying we want students to be able to engage in education and not indoctrination when they learn about evolution. And I think that that's really great to hear. So, Mr. Fred Cutting, I really appreciate your time being on our podcast today. And it's really great to hear about what you've done. I understand that, you know, it must have been frustrating for you to be working on these standards and seeing such a dogmatic tone being taken when the evolution standards were adopted. But it's great to know that there's somebody out there who is trying to advocate for good science education. And I hope that, you know, I wish your minority report the best when this issue actually comes to a vote in just a few weeks here.
Yes. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest in this subject. Again, I'm not alone. And we really, I want to say that the science standards in general are very good. And I want to say that everyone was working for what they thought was the best for our kids. But I'm glad that we're finding so much support in the community to change this one small area of the life science standards. Life science standards generally are good, but this is a small area that for some reason has become a very defensive stand from the point of the educators.
Well, we'll all be watching Florida to see what happens. Thank you so much, Mr. Fred Cutting, for being on our show. This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Stay tuned and thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.